Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd and a couple of teams counting stars, licking their wounds. Man, the 6-6 Sunday night tie in the desert.
Yeah, well, it'd be a lot tougher to count stars, but counting field goals is a lot easier, Sean Wally. I mean, my goodness, you know, I'm still trying to figure this one out. If it was a great football game or if it was, I don't know. You know, it's just one of those things that we're still talking about at the watering hole and trying to figure out what in the world happened.
Just amazing. It was a great football game from a defensive perspective, certainly. And as the announcers were saying during the game, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, that it brings you back to the 60s, 70s black and blue division where it was you just beat the other team up and there's not a lot of scoring. So really, man, you're kind of on the outside, meaning that you're not a fan of the Cardinals, you're not a fan of the Seahawks, but you're a fan of the game of football. So from that outside-ish perspective, your thoughts?
Well, you know, being a fan of football, I thought that it was an interesting but great contest because you were just wondering which team was going to break or which team was going to flinch, and neither of them did, you know, of course, with the outcome. As a fantasy fan that had two players, one on each side, I had a fit because there was no way in the world that you would think that Graham for Seattle or Fitzgerald, for that matter, would have the types of games that they had because they are daunting stars. But because of the defensive play, it just, it drove me crazy, Sean Wally. I couldn't even figure out what in the world was going on. And was it the defenses or were the quarterbacks just gun-shy as the game went on? But, you know, the more I looked at the defensive schemes of Seattle and of Arizona, I thought, you know, these guys, you know, did ratchet it up a little bit, and, you know, it did make for a great game. What would have made it a better game is if the special teams would have done what they were supposed to do in making their field goals, and then maybe the outcome probably wouldn't have been the way it was.
A definite defensive battle, and this very similar in Seattle's case to what they dealt with in Los Angeles with the Rams. And if you look at it, the NFC West, and this happens with all the divisions in interdivision play, the teams know each other so well. So in some cases, when the defenses are good enough and maybe even great, it's easy for them to stop what they think they know is coming because they've seen it, they've been there, done that. And the Cardinals and the Seahawks have been rivals for a few years. You know, before that, it was the 49ers, the whole Harbaugh, Pete Carroll deal, Kaepernick, the tip, both teams going back and forth, being good, if not great, for years. And now, you know, the Rams and Seahawks always have close games. The Cardinals and Seahawks are starting to get there. You know, the previous three games in Arizona, the Seahawks ran away with it, just ran them out of the building. But that definitely did not happen last night.
Yeah, you know, if you're a Seattle Seahawks fan, I'm thinking, though, you're thinking, man, you know, this 6-6 tie, I'll take it. If you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, and this is the first game of two, of course, with one being up in Seattle in a month, you're thinking, man, this was one that we really should have won. And what I mean by that is you know, the time of possession was far in favor of Arizona. They dominated the game in between the hashes. 132 yards rushing for Arizona, 52 for Seattle, 342 yards for Arizona, 225 for Seattle. Everything pointed in Arizona's way. As a matter of fact, the broadcasters were saying that Seattle didn't get past the 50 until there was some type of a botch on the field goal, I believe, that gave Seattle the ball in Arizona's territory. So this game was Arizona's game. For whatever reason, I don't know what in the world is going on with their place kicker. Chandler Cantazaro, I believe his name is, 2 of 4. Steve Hauschka, you know, which was just unprecedented for him late in the game to actually miss the field goals. When it came down to the kickers, those guys didn't shine. And, you know, it's sad. It's sad for Arizona because they, you know, they did that. I believe Arizona played the better game out of the two teams. It's just that they just didn't capitalize with the field goals. And it's just one of those games that they're going to be smarting for until they go back up to Seattle. And, man, they're going to be in the tough confines of the 12s in CenturyLink, and that's not going to be easy.
Well, Sean, we'll have a lot of time to talk NFL football later in the hour, but let's go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in the man, the myth, the legend. That is Eric Botsford, otherwise known as E-Rock from Tough Mudder fame. Eric, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Hey, thanks for being on, E-Rock, man. You know, I got to tell you, you know, I am a fan of yours, even though, you know, the obstacle courses for the Mudder, the Tough Mudders, they scare me, man. But for those of you, and we want you guys to go and take a look at Eric Botsford, E-Rock, and see what you look like, man. I envy you. You are cut and chiseled up and down, my brother. I love it.
Oh, man. Man, already I'm on the air, and you guys are already trying to give me some compliments. I really appreciate that. Yeah, no, it doesn't come without, you know. I work hard at it, so it's all good. But I really appreciate you saying that, man. I've devoted the long time, most of my life, you know, to kind of athletics and everything. So it all kind of shows after a while.
Well, the way the Tough Mudder started for you, of course, you've done CrossFit, and you took part in the CrossFit Games, which is amazing, man. And you know, those guys who participate there, you know, they're that's the best of the best when it comes to athleticism.
Oh man, yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, you know, for the past, you know, I got into sport when it was still fairly small, being from Northern California originally, and so kind of the breeding ground for all the great ones. So yeah, it was a good thing. I've just been able to, through training and, you know, proper coaching and everything, just been able to like sustain that level of competition. I you know, like probably a lot of your listeners out there, you know, we're born and bred competitors, you know, we've been competing all our life. And once I found that sport, I was like, ah, okay, here we go. I can compete in this no matter my age, as long as I stay healthy and you know, knock on wood, you know, minimal injuries. I'm able to stay up there with those guys. So shoots, yeah, I'm 37 now and still hanging with them.
Now, Eric, those Northern California ties, my co-host Sean Boyd, right there in the 916 in Elk Grove, to be exact. So suburb of Sacramento. So you've done a lot of good things there, being a firefighter previously, and of course your athletic prowess. What do you remember most? What are you most fond of about the Sacramento area? And
you're digging it out. And for all you guys out there that are listening from Northern California, from back in Sacramento especially, man, holds a huge, huge part piece of my heart. I've raised both my kids there. We had a really thriving gym community there. If you know Sacramento at all, it's growing up. We moved over to Hawaii right as soon as you know, the Kings are building the arena over there. They got the Republic, or you know, kicking butt. So it's a really really fun place. I got a lot of fond memories. I'm really quite partial to Sacramento. I've seen that city. I went to college there, so it's pretty cool to watch that city kind of grow up.
So Eric, the Sacramento area, how is the Tough Mudder competition and the competitors that come out for the events that travel around the country and in some cases the world?
Yeah, you know, Northern California just in general, and I guess really I've had the privilege of now touring with the Tough Mudder family, and this is just an incredible growing group of growing community, you know, worldwide community. It's pretty impressive, man. In Northern California, we have one of the best courses that we have in the Tough Mudder Tour. It's North Star, ski resort. So we're up there. We pretty much take over that whole Tahoe area, and that's a really good course. But you know, hey, Northern California is not the only place. I know even up in Canada, we have some amazing courses. All the way out here where I am now on the East Coast, they're putting up these courses, and just amazing people are showing up to these things. And you know, just once again, it's all about that community. It's pretty cool.
E-Rock joining us here on The Double. And, of course, E-Rock talking about your Sacramento ties. And, of course, me living here in Sacramento, Elk Grove, California.
Yeah.
There are a lot of CrossFit gyms that open, it seems like, every week. And now there is a correlation between CrossFit and doing the Tough Mudder. Am I correct?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we see a lot of it, a lot of those. You know, whether you're just an everyday athlete, you know, kind of cruising in the CrossFit gym looking to get fit, or if you're you know, a competitive person out there, you know, kind of there is a definite changeover. I mean, it's like a practical application of all that functional fitness training you're doing in there. I mean, Tough Mudder basically. I mean, for all the pull-ups and everything that you're doing in there, and all the, you know, power movements, strength to body weight ratio, that type of thing. It's you get to use it. I mean, you get to Tough Mudder's fun, man. I mean, it's like a kid, adult's playground. You know, you get to go out there, swing around, jump around, splash in the mud. It's pretty cool. I gotta say, I didn't, you know, talk to me 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been like, what is this thing? I wasn't like super into it as much. And then now that I've been on the, you know, in with the community for so long now, it's so amazing. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of folks from that Sacramento area, you know, show up to these events. You know, I don't know what it is. I think we just got a kind of a cool little community there. You know, we're pretty athletic, pretty down to do whatever. You know, a lot of fun.
I mean, it's great. And you mentioned North Star, just a beautiful facility up there in the Tahoe region. And man, whether it's the summertime or the wintertime, all year round, it's just beautiful to get up there.
Oh, dude, totally. That's the other biggest thing is you just get to get outside. You get to, you know, kind of, like I said, just to go and explore nature in the kind of a really fun way. The Tough Mudder thing is absolutely just, you know, something everybody should probably try. You know, I'm out here actually right now in New York kind of doing something right now to help kind of grow this community even wider all over the world. And it's going to take off. It's going to grow. So it's pretty cool. It's fun thing to be part of.
Yeah, I believe so. And of course, Sean Wally had the chance to work with you up in Black Diamond, Washington. Yeah. And as you were promoting the Tough Mudder for CBS Sports. And so I'm sure that there's a lot of rigors as far as the preparation is concerned, probably so than the actual event itself.
Yeah, so what Sean was up there, it was actually really great to connect with him, so what they were doing. So CBS has been, you know, kind of biting at the heels of Tough Mudder, and you know, I'm sure it's been reciprocal, you know, and the whole thing. But like that what they've done is they've kind of just jumped on the back, and they've seen the value in what we're doing out there. Not only is this an athletic outlet, but just, you know, once again, it's a community, is you know, whatever, it's just a really cool thing. So CBS has jumped on board. So Sean was up in Seattle. We were filming for the 2016 season of a new TV show that's coming out on CBS Sports. It's actually going to culminate in the running, where they're going to film me running the world's toughest mudder. Now, I don't know how much information you have on this, but it's a 24-hour endurance race, which, if you know me, that's a stretch. You know, I'm not much of a runner, man, but I've been training a lot. I've been working hard towards this thing. And so it's a 24-hour endurance race. You do this 5-mile loop over and over again. And there's like 18 obstacles in it. And this thing is just, you know, I was a firefighter, like I said, or like you mentioned before, and I could take a beating. I've been up all night. I know how to rough it pretty well. But man, this thing last year, I did it for the first time, and it beat the hell out of me. I mean, I really can't tell you. It's 24 hours of just being wet, cold, and miserable.
Now, Eric, you beat me to it with the world's toughest mudder, roughly 3 weeks away in Las Vegas. Now, you mentioned it is 24 hours. Is each person physically on the course running it for 24 hours, or is it a team event? How does it work?
So this year there's actually a new category where you have a two-person team. Generally speaking, you'll have either a four-person team in years past or an individual event. Those individuals will go for like a $100,000 prize purse. Sponsored by Cellucor, which is they've done a lot to help promote the brand as well. But this year, yeah, it's two-person team. During the race, yes, both participants. If you're on a team, a two-person team, everybody's out there on the course. Obviously, if you're an individual, you're out there the whole time as well. As I said, it's a 5-mile loop. So every 5 miles, you get to come in and you get to what we call pit stop. You know, this is like, you know, drink your protein shakes, maybe take your electrolytes, kind of change your socks, you know, put on a warm pair of socks where, you know, for a moment before you get wet again. And you just basically just keep cruising, keep rolling. And the biggest thing that we did last year was my partner and I, who's also he's also an MC for Tough Mudder, he and I are good friends. He's actually from the Tahoe area. He and I just promised ourselves we would never stop, because you watch those guys. I mean, once that sun goes down in the desert, and those of you and your listeners that know, man, the Vegas desert, it's hot in the summertime, hot in the daytime. But once that sun goes down, man, it is like iceberg, man. The wind comes up. It is freezing cold. And, so we just promised ourselves we wouldn't stop, because you watch those guys, they sit down for 1 minute too long, and boom, they're out. Lots of medicals, lots of people going down because of that, and a lot of busted up people, too. These obstacles are not easy.
Eric, what is the toughest challenge with a Tough Mudder? Is it physical, mental, or a combination of both?
You know, I guess that's a really good question. Honestly, it's, you know, if you're physically prepared for the obstacles, you know, you're somebody that's training a lot, and, you know, you have a good bit of upper body strength, and, you know, you can kind of suck it up physically. I think you're pretty good. I mean, the world's toughest mudder is in a league of its own. But say you want to go out and you want to tackle like a Tough Mudder, which I think everybody should do, you know, primarily, First and foremost, go out and have some fun, jump in the mud, you know, try these obstacles out there, kick-ass obstacles. But secondly, it's about those people. I mean, these people that you're going out there, they're not like they're not the extreme athletes. You know, that they're out there to challenge themselves, do something amazing with their lives, and you get to listen to these stories, and it's really just incredible. So I would do that. But to answer your question more directly, I guess, you know, if you can get past the physical challenges, man, it's mental. I mean, you put that many miles on your feet, it's gonna bust you up a little bit. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But you know, I like to keep it short. You know, anything over 3 miles is kind of a lot in my book. So I like to keep it short.
For those of you just tuning in, Eric Botsford, A.K.A. E-Rock, joining us here on the Double. Now, Eric, in my previous life,
yeah,
I used to be a world-class track and field athlete, long distance.
No now, kidding. You ran the long stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you know, that mentality never leaves you. And
right.
So what I'm getting at is, you talk about some of the people who are novice who just started out at this, and, you know, they go out to have fun. For somebody like myself, it's a little more competitive, even though I'm probably about 50 pounds over what I was when I was – running world class. But how would somebody like myself get themselves motivated to tackle such a, it seems like a daunting obstacle?
Well, motivation is one. I thought you were going to ask me about the physical stuff, and I'd say, hey, you know, like, I bet you still got it. If you got the competitive drive, you can do it. So physically, You know the body. You know that you
right.
ran the miles. You, any of you and your listeners right now, like, you know, like, the body's going to give up way before the mind does. You know what I'm saying? If the mind goes, obviously your body's going to follow. But, man, that body will keep moving. So, yeah, the motivation there. But I will say, like, if you're interested at all, somebody who's, like, just coming off the couch, like, wanting to challenge himself or try something new, like, go to the Tough Mudder website or research it, YouTube it. I got it. I can't stress it enough. We have, you know, just to give you an example of the type of people that come out to these things. I mean, we have, I don't know if you're familiar with who Noah Galloway is. Noah Galloway, Ranger, Army Ranger, you know, unfortunately got, you know, hit and lost an arm, lost an egg. Lost a leg. He's one of our ambassadors, and he's kind of a true testament to the type of people that come out. We have a lot of wounded warriors that come out there with, you know, limited, you know, physical capabilities. And you know what? They have an army of people behind them. From the first step, when they cross that start line, they have an army of people that are saying, you know what? I don't care about how fast I do this course today. I don't care if I have to, like, walk this thing with you. I'm going to get you up and over this thing. And that goes for all the wounded vets that we have, all the folks that come out there with, you know, whether you're 100 pounds overweight, whether you're a military veteran who's lost an arm, lost a leg, whatever it might be, like, man, there are just an army of people. So, man, I'll tell you, it doesn't matter what shape you're in. If you got the motivation to come out there and change your life at a Tough Mudder, it's going to happen. Like, you're going to meet people that are, like, right there with you. So, yeah, I think you would be good, especially if you have that mental drive already inside of you, you know, from back in the day.
yeah, from way back in the day. But, yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, I've contemplated. Of course, Sean Wally is mentioned. He says, hey, man, this is something that you have to do. Me and water really don't mix, especially brown, muddy water. But, you know, I'm sure if I was coaxed into it, you know, well enough, then, yeah, I would definitely take on something like that.
Yeah, you might want to stay off the 20-foot high dive that we got out there in the middle of the course. But but yeah, you might be good in some of the other ones. They're kind of cool.
Yeah, so Sean was showing me something where there are people that were trying to hit a bell.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's not me, E-Rock. That's not me, man.
King of swingers. King of swingers.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Eric, can Sean wear water wings?
Of course. Yeah, I've seen it done. He can wear water wings and a tutu if he wants to. Hey, you know, it's all good out there. You know, he comes how he pleases, you know. That's all good. No, it's you know, we have people that go up there. Awesome. We always, in my role at Tough Mudder is to kind of warn people in the beginning, too. I'm like, hey, listen, just don't push it, you know what I mean? Because we get people up there. They get to the top of these obstacles, 20 feet in the air. They got to jump off this thing, you know, then swing out, you know, and try to hit that bell. And they, you know, stand up there and they yell down at the lifeguard, you know, like, I can't swim. And you're like, ah, what the hell got you up on the top of that thing anyway, man, you know? But you know, yeah, people do some funny things when they're coaxed into it. So, amazing. I don't know. I think it'd be fun. I think you take a GoPro, me and you go out there on the course. We'd have a good time. We could make some good footage.
There we go.
Yeah.
As long as I have the water wings.
Exactly.
Well, Eric, in a couple years, you know, you and I are close in age, so we've got a number coming up that, you know,
yep.
It's inevitable. But Sean yep. Boyd has one as well. It's just a little bit further out there, if you get my drift. So
yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, maybe for that big number that's inevitable, heck, let's do it. You know, pick a site, whether it's the Northern California, was it North Star?
Either way, wherever.
Or Black Diamond, or somewhere in between.
Oh, you know, it would be fun. Yeah, that would be just a blast. I absolutely would be, we could have a good time. It would be a good time. Guaranteed.
Eric, you talk about you being the hype man for the Tough Mudder events, and that's how we met at the Black Diamond Seattle Tough Mudder. How did you come about that? The story is amazing. Tell our listeners how E-Rock came to happen.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. I mentioned my friend Kyle, who also is an MC. You know, he was actually going heli skiing. He'd done a few. You know, the position really didn't exist a couple of years ago that we have, this MC position where we, you know, kind of motivate, get people fired up for this event. And so my buddy Kyle kind of started it off, like doing a couple of events, and you know, one event turned into two events, and they, you know, they t- Tough Mudder kind of saw the value in it, and so we so he was going heli skiing up in Alaska, and he was like, he called me up, he's like, ah man, you want to try this thing out? And I was, he's like, I got to go to Alaska, I can't be at this event. I said, eh, why not? You know, he's like, they want somebody with a lot of energy. And it, yeah, and Sean, you know, I mean, man, I do, as you saw, I have a lot. I'm not like one of those guys that's just born with a lot of energy. So, yeah, I went out there. It was L.A., hot as could be. There's, you know, L.A. events are always nuts because you get the, you know, movie people, you get all kinds of TV. Everybody's got a camera in their your face, like doing this or doing that. And I was just blown away by this whole thing. But the other thing was once again, going back to the community, I was blown away by these military veterans, you know, entire units of guys and gals, too, that showed up to support their, you know, wounded warriors and stuff. And I swear, I, you know, just by default, man, just by meeting these people, shed a bunch of tears, ran with these guys, you know, was just absolutely sold and just got locked in. And then once again, one event turned into two events turned into 17, and now I'm the hype man. That's what I do for Tough Mudder. So I tour all over and help the community grow. Pretty cool.
And as was talked about a little bit earlier, that's one of the things that really blew me away with the event, that it's really not timed at a regular Tough Mudder. There aren't winners and losers and I beat you. It's not like that. Everybody helps everybody. You help one another. You help your brothers, your sisters. And as you mentioned, there are people of all shapes, sizes, ages, doesn't matter. From, I saw people that seemed to be 16 to 70, 75, and, yeah. And I'm sure you know of people that were older, and they were out there giving it their all, and that's one of the great things of the event.
Yeah, you know, I always say we don't give out medals, you know, we give out heart, and that's truly something that makes Tough Mudder unique. You know, there's obviously prizes like the World's Toughest Mudder. There's folks, that's a competition, you know, folks are going for some cash, but the and rightfully so. I mean, you got to earn that stuff. But the you know, weekend after weekend, it's really about everybody making it to that finish line, earning that headband, that right to call yourself a Tough Mudder. You know, sharing a beer with your fellow mudders, you know, and just kind of just celebrating the success of doing something. Because once again, as you saw out there, I mean, these folks are, you know, most people that come to Tough Mudder, this is they're out there to, like, you know, to prove to themselves that they want to, you know, make that challenge or, you know, take on a challenge in their life. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, go, you know, do something you've done a bunch of times and, you know, feel pretty pleased with yourself, but, you know, to scare the heck out of yourself to do something for the first time, you know, that's truly what we celebrate at Tough Mudder.
The thrill, definitely.
The thrill of it. The thrill of throwing yourself off a 20-foot tie dive. There you go.
Now, Eric, obviously you put a lot of time and effort into working out and not saying that everybody looks like you, but how much work are you putting into the gym in order to stay in shape and do these types of Tough Mudder obstacles?
Yeah, so from a competitive side of things, you know, I can honestly say I'm pretty addicted to my sport. I train whenever I possibly can. You know, I got off. So for instance, I live in Hawaii. I flew an all nighter here to New York this morning. First thing I did, got off the plane 6 a.m, completely wiped out. Didn't sleep very much. Went into the gym and went and trained. You know, I just forced myself into it. I don't know how much longer my body can take that, but it's a but it's something I'm just, you know, I always think about the guy that, you know, it's that old adage, you know, like every moment that you're sitting down is a moment that you're you know, your fellow competitors are in the gym, like hitting it hard, training hard. And it's same with collegiate sports, same with, you know, youth sports even nowadays, you know, like everybody's training real hard, man. And if you want it, you got to stay on that work. You got to stay on it. And it's, you know, luckily, I have a great wife. She keeps my nutrition on lock, and, you know, and you both know that, like, you know, as we get older, that means more than anything, you know, keeping that nutrition on lock. And so yeah, I'm training. I do normally 2 sessions a day. I do a morning session after I coach, and then an afternoon session depending on how I feel, like depending on the volume. So I train twice. I coach a bunch of classes during the day, and then on the weekends I do I stand on stage and yell into a microphone. Now, Eric, I'm pretty active.
You and your wife run Good Times CrossFit in Hawaii, goodtimescrossfit.com. And as we know, New Year's is coming around the corner.
Rapidly. Can you believe how fast 2016 went? I can't even believe it. Yeah, wow. It's coming, which means
everybody's
New Year's resolution.
That's right. Get in shape, lose weight, be healthier.
Yeah.
And you know what?
You know what I want? I want to see people stick with it. I want to see little goals. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I want to see. Because that's
where I'm at. You know, the little goals I think would keep me going because you know I'm just like any other person now. I start getting back into shape and then I peter off a little bit and the couch seems more inviting and I just never win that way. And I would like to start with the little goals because something tells me once I get myself back into shape, I'm not letting myself out of shape. So
I'll just make 2 points on that. You know, number one, setting a goal can be as simple as signing, just pick a date for that, just to bring it back to the Tough Mudder thing. Like pick a date for Tough Mudder, be like, all right, you know what, I'm gonna do this thing. And this goes out to any of your listeners, like, you know what? There's a pickup football game or like a pickup soccer game or whatever it might be. Like, sign up for it. It's a month out. Like, get up, get your butt moving, and do it. Like, just setting that type of thing, in advance, and then even shorter term goals. It can be like, all right, listen, for this entire week, I'm gonna cut out sugar from my diet. Done. Like, and you know what? It's gonna be a pain in the ass, but I'm gonna do it. And so there's different ways you can attack the goals. It doesn't necessarily, like you're saying, it doesn't have to be like big life changing, monumental things. It can just be, one day at a time. Today I'm going to blank. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's how we get closer to it. But I find that setting like a physical challenge, like something out there, like say signing up for Tough Mudder, say, or something like that, or jumping back into a 5K or whatever it might be, That seems to be a real good motivator. Just having that thing just watching that date creep up on your calendar kind of helps out.
Eric Botsford, a.k.a. E-Rock of Tough Mudder fame. You can find more information at toughmudder.com. And don't forget goodtimescrossfit.com. E-Rock, thanks for your time, your insight. Great getting to meet you, getting to know you at the Seattle Tough Mudder. And hopefully we'll do it again.
Appreciate having you on, E-Rock.
Hey, thanks so much, guys. Have a good one.
There goes E-Rock Eric Botsford staying up late on the East Coast for us here tonight on The Double.
Man, that guy gets me pumped up and excited, man. And as I mentioned before, I need to start with some smaller goals because, it's easy to just to jump in and start doing 100 push-ups and then you quit. But I think if I can do it step by step, Mr. Wally, get myself ready to go. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to have guest number two on, and that is none other than Evan Washburn of CBS Sports. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on The Double with the Double S Express.
Are you tired of the gym scene in Tri-Cities, Washington? Tired of seeing all those ridiculous gym selfies? If you are ready to work on a better you, Power Alley Performance is the place you can reach your goals. From one-on-one personal training to group fitness sessions, the trainers at Power Alley Performance will help motivate you every step of the way. Trainers DJ and Lamont have a wealth of knowledge and experience that they are ready to share with you. Call Power Alley today at 509-554-4785 and tell them the Double S Express sent you for a complimentary half-hour session. Visit PowerAlleyPerformance.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Getting you pumped up here on the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. How can you not be pumped up after talking to E-Rock?
Yeah, man, he's got me thinking about diving into a pool of coffee and going over obstacles and, running for 5 miles, 10 miles. My goodness, man, I thought that I was done with that, but yeah, it was great. Great having E-Rock on.
Done with that. You've never seen anything like it. Just wait until the CBS Sports Network airs the first show in December. Your jaw will drop.
Well, you know, I meant I thought I was done with that competitiveness as far as, you know, going over obstacles and running for miles and miles and miles at a time, but I guess not.
Man. Well, it won't be the distance, pace, and the speed of which you used to run. It is more of a controlled maintenance phase to where you can finish the 10 miles and all 23 obstacles as there were in Seattle.
Well, yeah, as long as I can get a pace going or something like that, it should be fun. But again, that whole water thing, that's the part that gets to me. I can't see in the bottom of the pool, man. What in the world are we doing?
We can guarantee you there will be no sharks or piranhas.
Jeez.
We'll get you the water wings. And I'm thinking even the inflatable donut with the head and tail that goes around the waist.
Perfect. Perfect. That'll work. That will work.
Oh, man, that's going to be amazing.
Yes.
Something else that was amazing that we were talking about before we were joined by E-Rock. The Sunday night football debacle that was Arizona hosting Seattle. Now, Sean, one thing I'd like to touch on and get your opinion. The way the two coaches handled their kickers' misses. I don't know if you heard what Pete Carroll and Bruce Arians had to say about their own kickers. Arians chose the negative.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll had his guys back.
Yeah, it goes back to what I was saying earlier as far as, you know, that game last night was Arizona's game to win. And I believe the reason why Coach Arians explained it the way he did was because this was one that got away. And, you know, they know, meaning the Cardinals, they know that when they go up to CenturyLink, that it's going to be far tougher to get that victory. And I just think Coach Arians was just talking about, you know, he was caught in the moment. And, you know, but if you think about it, yes, that's all Catanzaro has to do is kick a field goal. You know, these guys are out there beating themselves in the head left and right for 60 minutes of football. And all the kicker has to do is kick the ball through the uprights. And I know that it's easier said than done, but doggone it, when you're getting paid millions of dollars to do so and you practice that time and time again, ever since you were in middle school, the high school, the college, to where those guys are practicing, you're off on the other field and you're doing tricks with the football. You're bouncing it off the ground. You can make it pause on your helmet. All of these crazy things that you can do. But to kick the football through the uprights, that is your goal. And for that not to happen, yeah, I kind of err on the side of, I can see where Coach Arians is coming from. Now, Coach Carroll, let's face it. I mean, that's who he is. And he understands that there are bigger fish to fry, and they've been to the pinnacle. They've won the Super Bowl. And, you know, that's the ultimate goal. But if you're the Arizona Cardinals, you want any type of advantage that you could possibly get. And they had the chance last night. And unfortunately, their kicker went 2 of 4. And, you know, it winds up in a stalemate.
But as a former college athlete yourself, not only that, you had a son that played major college football.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the two drastic comparisons, or contrast, I guess I can say, with the two coaching styles, and even taking it a step further to life and business, raising your kids,
what's
better to get the result you want? Is it the negative? Is it the, you screwed up, you better not do it again? Or is it the, hey man, stuff happens, we believe in you, you'll get them next time?
Well, I don't think he said that you screwed up. It's just, it was more of the fact that it was a tough pill to swallow. And if you talk to Chandler, he'll tell you that, man, you know, that was all on me. And, you know, I accept full responsibility. I think it'll make him better. You're mentioning the two styles of coaching, which I was actually watching those styles unfold in the overtime and going late in the fourth quarter and going into the overtime. And I'm still trying to figure out Pete Carroll and, you know, what his mantra is. Because when you hear him talk, as he had talked about his kicker, he says, man, I love him. He's going to have another chance and this, that, and the other. But, man, when you saw Coach Arians in the fourth quarter and you saw him in overtime, everything was even keel all the way up until the missed field goal. When the field goal was missed, he threw his card down. And he was upset, and then some of the other players just kind of fell down. You know, their emotions were on their sleeve. And then I look at Coach Carroll. As his team was down, he was you know, a little nervous, a little downtrodden. In the fourth quarter when they tied the game up, and he felt like they were on the drive to win the game, oh, my goodness, did I see a swagger in him that is something that if I'm the opposing team, it would drive me crazy. Because he has this little cool walk and he has this little jive that he walks up and down like, man, we're about to get this and we're about to, you know, put these guys under. And then the look on his face showed me something as far as, man, don't be careful of being too cocky because the game's not over. And as a result, if you look at the two coaches and how they handled themselves, I would say Coach Arians handled himself even more even keeled than Pete Carroll did.
Huh. Wow. We don't have enough time left in the hour to delve into that. But
I'm not a Seahawks fan and I'm not a Cardinals fan.
Correct.
I'm just telling it the way that I see it. And so from what I saw, Coach Arians handled himself more even keeled than Pete Carroll did. And they'll replay it, and you'll see the braggadocious attitude that Pete Carroll had as he thought. And you know what? You know what's funny? Because I think that there are a lot of Seahawk fans that were, at the time, laughing at Cannizzaro and saying, dude, you are horrible, and here's Steve Hauschka, and he's going to show you how it's done. Because this is Steve Hauschka. He doesn't miss field goals.
As any opposing team would have done in that moment.
But as the announcers were saying, that Steve Hauschka, this was not his place that he enjoys kicking field goals in. And they explained that the whole fourth quarter. And they explained that all through the overtime. And sure enough, you know, as fans would do, they would think that, yeah, you know, this is a chipper. And Hauschka proved that he's just as human as Cannizzaro. And now we're stuck with a 6-6 tie. And, you know, I do look on the social media, and Seahawk fans are more acceptable to this 6-6 tie than the Arizona Cardinal fans are. I can tell you that.
Oh, of course. Because the tie not gaining ground in the division hurts Arizona more than it hurts Seattle at this point.
Well, even more than that, Arizona dominated the game. Whether you want to agree with it or not, their stats and the way that they played that game, they dominated the game. And for Seattle to come up with, you know, a couple of breaks here and there, yeah, they squeaked one out to get the tie. And so, therefore, Seattle should feel fortunate enough to have a tie instead of the loss. But truthfully, if Arizona were to do what they were supposed to do, they win this game. They win this game easily, actually, but they made a few mistakes that are going to haunt them. Now, going up to Seattle, like I said, is going to be entirely different, even though Arizona proved a couple of years ago that they can beat the crap out of Seattle up there. But it's not going to be an easy task, and I believe that Seattle is going to remember that, and they're going to have something for the Cardinals. So Arizona missed an opportunity to take advantage and put themselves back into the race where they needed to be, and now we have this asterisk with a tie right next to it, and this could keep them from having home field advantage at some point.
Which makes Seattle's defensive performance last night all that more impressive, and it will be a very special night on Christmas Eve at CenturyLink when the Cardinals come to town.
Yeah, you know, who wants to travel up to Seattle during the holidays on Christmas Eve to play a football game? You know, again, this was the opportunity for Arizona to put themselves back into strong contention in winning the NFC West, and now they're going to have to hope for, you know, maybe another loss here. You know, hopefully the Rams can put a dent in something, which I doubt it. The 49ers, let's face it, they can't get out of their own way. So, you know, now Arizona is forced to be looking up at the Seattle Seahawks in divisional play and then hoping that maybe they can get some help down the line with some of the other non-divisional games.
A game on Christmas Eve, if I think way back in my memory, one Sean Boyd's first experience in television production came on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, well, man, that was a lot of fun, and that was the Seattle Seahawks against the Indianapolis Colts, and that was back in 2005, and you know that was an awesome experience to be a part of, and being down on the field and getting the chance to, you know, witness what these football players go through. You know, I remember being down there. I was with the sideline reporter. I believe it was Bonnie Bernstein for CBS at the time. And so, yeah, that was a fun time.
Well, Sean, your team that you love, the Oakland Raiders, flew cross country and took care of the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville, home of the pool that the fans can purchase and play in all game long in the Jacksonville sunshine. And the contest really wasn't won. Jacksonville never really showed up, never made it much of a question. And your Raiders did what they needed to do. I think the defense really showed up and took to heart that they have had some issues there, and Ken Norton probably gave them a whooping all week to get them right, and Jacksonville was a good team for them to get right.
Yeah, there were so many so many battles within the battle with this game. Of course, Coach Jack Del Rio returning back to Jacksonville, where he was the head coach for 9 years, and coaching against his former team, so that was something that, you know, he was looking forward to showing that he has matured over the years. You're looking at two quarterbacks in the 2014 draft, Derek Carr and Blake Bortles. And, you know, the whole to-do was that Blake Bortles was the better quarterback, which is the reason why he was taken second overall. Of course, we know Derek Carr picked in the second round, so there was that battle there. And as you were mentioning, Ken Norton Jr. trying to make things feasible for his defense. I mean, let's face it, the Raiders had, you know, up to this point, six games in the NFL, have given up almost 460 yards per game as a defense. Now, that's horrible. That's not a good recipe to go off of. And so, you know, the Raiders came in with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. They understood that, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars under Gus Bradley is a formidable foe. But, man, the Raiders did come out to play. Their defense did an awesome job. Two interceptions and a fumble recovery. And, of course, Derek Carr doing his thing with no turnovers, no interceptions, and just doing a yeoman's job. And let's not forget Latavius Murray, Sean, while his first game back from turf toe, had 18 carries, 59 yards, and two touchdowns. So for those of you who are kind of wondering if you should have put him in on fantasy, he kind of said, man, if you didn't put me in, shame on you. So he had a great game. And, of course, you have Michael Crabtree with another touchdown, which puts him at 6, leading the NFL, Sean Wally, in touchdowns, tied with Mike Evans for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which those two will be going head-to-head, both on offense, this upcoming week as the Oakland Raiders are staying down in Florida, Sean Wally. They're not coming back west. They're staying there in Florida, had a day off, and they look to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this upcoming weekend.
That was my next question for you, is would they come all the way back cross country to Alameda and get ready for the week and then fly all the way back, which doesn't seem to make a ton of sense. Some guys like it because you stay in your normal routine. Other people don't want to fly that much and take all that time and possible jet lag.
Yeah, you know, Jack Del Rio, it was an easy decision for him to stay in Florida. For those of you that don't know, his son is the starting quarterback for the Florida Gators, so it makes it easy for him to stay down there. He gets to take care of business with his team and then watch his son in Gainesville play for the Florida Gators. So it just made a lot of sense for those guys to stay down there. And, of course, they've earned it. Now, you're looking at a team, even though they've had defensive woes, their offense is impeccable. So if you're going against the Oakland Raiders, your offense better be revved up to the fullest because they're going to score 30 points. They have two number one receivers in Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, and they have who I believe is an MVP candidate for this year in Derek Carr. So they have all of the pieces in place, not to mention, I would say, probably the second best offensive line to the Dallas Cowboys as far as blocking. Derek Carr does not wind up on his back. And so, you know, you have all of that, and then these guys are staying down. They are 4-0, Sean Wally, 4-0 on the road, which is the best record on the road in the NFL. So these guys are road warriors. They're battle-tested. And, you know, I'd like to see how far they could go with this thing. Wouldn't it be something if they could go 8-0 on the road?
I'm sure you saw it, or maybe you didn't. You might have been on the road returning home from Santa Clara working the 49er game, or what should have been a game, but it's the 49ers. And yeah, but the NBC crew was asked who's going to win the AFC West. And there were, you know, a few varied answers. Somebody said Chiefs, somebody said Broncos, and Tony Dungy gave the edge to your Raiders based on their road record. Although Rodney Harrison said, no, they can't win at home. Not going to happen.
Well, I would not expect Rodney Harrison to give the Oakland Raiders any favor after the years that he played in San Diego. And that's just, it is what it is. You know, he can't put his bias aside. And I know Rodney Harrison, and that's just not the type of person that he is. But yeah, for them to have a good road record, let's face it, that would be great. Now, they just have to get things right at home and get some things going there. And, you know, it looks like they will contest for the AFC West. I still like the Kansas City Chiefs, and I still like the Denver Broncos to challenge for that. I believe it's Denver's division to lose. And, of course, they're doing some good things despite losing Peyton Manning, Hall of Fame quarterback. And the Kansas City Chiefs with Alex Smith, I mean, they continue to keep trudging along and doing the right things and not making mistakes. And they have a great football organization as well. So it's going to be fun to see how this AFC West winds up here as we go into the second half of the season.
Well, Sean, the baseball championship is set, otherwise known as the World Series, and holy smokes, the champion will be crowned that has not been crowned in over 100 years in the case of the Chicago Cubs, and well over 60, 70 years in the case of the Cleveland Indians. Man, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, you know, congratulations to both of these clubs. I mean, you know, you talk about the Chicago Cubs and the things that they have gone through over the years, and it looked like, you know, there was a chance in, and I believe in 2008, to where they were going to finally make it to the World Series. And, of course, our buddy Bartman took over, and I'm sorry, the 2004, thank you, 2004 that happened, and, you know, the whole Bartman deal and, you know, black cats running across the field, anything you could think of as far as superstition, the Chicago Cubs embraced it. And, you know, to have them in the World Series is just amazing. And as far as Cleveland is concerned, man, with sports, we had written off, you know, anything Cleveland up until this past year, where the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James win the NBA title, so they have an NBA title under their belt. And wouldn't it be something? I mean, wouldn't it be something for the Cleveland Indians to go into this World Series, take care of business? And this was something that that LeBron James had talked about while they were in the playoffs. He was talking about the great things that were happening with the Cleveland Indians, Terry Francona doing an awesome job. And, you know, wouldn't it be great to have two world championships in 1 year for the city of Cleveland? So, you have two cities, Chicago and Cleveland, that haven't seen postseason for a while. And this should be a fun World Series for everybody to see, Sean.
All I can say is the sports gods must be smiling on two-thirds of the Cleveland sports teams. And if you're the Cleveland Browns or their fans, you're wondering how you got missed.
Yeah, well, you know, you talk about that lump of coal in your stocking for Christmas. Yeah, that's the Cleveland Browns. You know, I don't know what's going on there, but can you imagine if Cleveland, if the Indians win the World Series? I mean, you're talking about two teams in 1 year. That almost puts them in title town contention there. You know, I mean, you're talking about a city that where everybody laughs at it and go, oh, Cleveland, you don't want to stop in Cleveland. You don't want to go to Cleveland. And then Cleveland becomes Title Town USA for a year. Man, that is that's something if they could pull it off.
Well, at the very least, Cleveland has an NBA championship, an American League championship, yet the Browns can't even win one game.
You know, I was joking about that with my youngest son in the car. And he says, you know, to be honest with you, I think that the Browns are going 0-16. Every time I do my pick'em league, whoever's playing the Browns, they ask you who's going to score the most. And I always pick the team that plays Cleveland, and who's going to score the least. Well, I pick Cleveland. And so,
but
you know, it's
your boy.
Just.
That's your boy coaching that team.
Yeah. Well, he's no longer coaching the Raiders. So, you know, I. It's tough, man. Being a Cleveland Brown, they're going to need this. They're going to need the Cleveland Indians to pull it off, to offset, you know, what the Browns are doing, because the Browns are losing enough for both, you know, both the other teams in, you know, respectively in the town.
Real quick, Sean, college football, the University of Washington Huskies now fourth in the AP poll, would be in the college football playoff if the season ended right now. And how the Washington State Cougars, led by Mike Leach, are not in the top 25 is beyond me. They beat ASU for the first time in Tempe since, drumroll please, 2001, when they were led by our former guest, Jason Gesser.
You know, the problem with the Washington State Cougars is they are the Washington State Cougars. And to be honest with you, I am pulling for them because if the more they win, it gives the Huskies a strength of schedule that will keep them in the top four. That's the only reason why I'm rooting for anything that the Cougars do. You know, when you start out each year and you play an FCS team and you cannot beat them, it takes you a while to get credibility in Division 1A. And, you know, as much as the Cougars look like they're one of those top teams, they can get blown out in any of these next 3 weeks, and we won't be talking about how great the Cougars are. So, you know, I do hope that they continue to have some have winning. But, you know, of course, when they play that Apple Cup, the University of Washington, I just believe, is just a far superior team than that of the Cougs. But it would be good to see the Apple Cup mean something. And then, of course, the Huskies go into the Pac-12 championship with that all on the line. And I believe that right now they're on a collision course to play the Colorado Buffaloes, I'm thinking, for the Pac-12 championship. And then they can go on into the playoff and win the national championship. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, Sean, the Huskies have a huge game this weekend at Utah. The Utes doing good things down there in the Pac-12 South. And Utah will be hosting your favorite show, College Game Day, on ESPN.
Yeah, you know, it sounded like College Game Day wasn't going to show up, but then they made the decision as of late to be there for College Game Day. That should be a lot of fun for, you know, for the whole country to see the Pac-12. And I won't say new teams, because Utah's been pretty good for the past few years. I know the University of Washington has been kind of climbing their way back up, but let's face it, the Oregon Ducks they eclipse anything that any other Pac-12 team could do. So it's good to see new teams at the top. And I believe that the country will be pleasantly surprised to see how great these two teams are. This should be a tough one for the Huskies, but I believe they'll pull it out.
And we will see what happens this coming weekend in both college football and the National Football League, as well as the World Series getting underway. Sean, I'm so excited for our next guest, as I worked with him in Seattle week 1 of the NFL season. You worked with him last, I believe, the Super Bowl in February in Santa Clara.
Yes, and of course, at the end of our first break, I gave you a teaser on our second guest. So, as we take a break, when we come back, we will have our second guest on the show, and that is none other than Evan Washburn of CBS Sports. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Guys, are you tired of being tired? Frustrated because it seems impossible to lose belly fat? If you're looking for a solution, then listen to Mark.
I had fantastic results with the Andro 400 Max. Probably lost 35 pounds, and more impressive than that was the inches I lost off of my belly and my waist. And the increased energy is fantastic. I'll be totally honest, I tried a different product, and I wasn't happy with the different product. You guys are considerably cheaper than the other brand, and I can really feel the difference.
Andro 400 Max, the extra strength, all-natural testosterone booster. The safe, easy, and affordable way to gain energy and lose stubborn belly fat. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Feel and look like a new man. Go to andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd, and let's go back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big-time guest number two tonight, and that is CBS Sports' own Evan Washburn. Evan, thanks for your time tonight.
Oh, of course. Anytime, guys.
Hey, Evan, great night tonight for you, man, taking the time out. Of course, you're at the Jets-Ravens game doing some sideline reporting. Is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
Oh, man, so what a game. Now, who would have thunk that the New York Jets would have pulled out the win? Of course, they went 24-16, and, man, it didn't start out, you know, in the normal fashion. Fitzpatrick, you know, doesn't get the nod. Geno Smith gets some playing time. He gets hurt. Fitzpatrick comes back in, and there's a whole whirlwind in this win. But once again, the Jets do get the win.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Whenever you do a Jets game, you're not exactly sure what's going to happen. And it was funny after all the quarterback drama of the week and them making the switch to Geno, we said in one of our meetings that, man, it'd be wild if Geno got hurt because they weren't activating Bryce Petty or Christian Hackenberg, so it was going to be Fitzpatrick, and that's what happened. So it was one of those things where that's the beauty of these Sundays. You can do all the planning and all the preparations, but once the game happens, you just got to follow the game. And yesterday, the major storyline was obviously Geno Smith going down and then Fitzpatrick going in and being effective, which he hadn't been in previous weeks. And now it just adds to the drama there in New York to where they go from here. Once Geno, if Geno gets healthy, does he get his job back or does Fitzpatrick now become the starting quarterback for the next couple weeks? And then Fitzpatrick adds to it by being pretty blunt post game about how he feels the organization pretty much gave up on it.
Yeah, isn't that something? And so, you know, Fitzpatrick comes back and gets the win, as you said. And I'm sorry I said tonight, but last night. The game was last night. But, yeah, so Fitzpatrick, you know, shows some discord. But, you know, do you think he's taking the high road in this? Do you think he's right at all by calling out management?
Well, I think it's a guy that's 12 years in the league and has been passed around a lot, and partly due to because he's not an elite-level quarterback, but he's really overachieved at times, and that's why he's gotten paid some pretty big contracts over the years. And I think at this point he sees, I have most of the power in this situation, and I can get away with this. And he, at this point, doesn't have really anything to lose. So
I find it refreshing, as a guy who's spending most of my time hearing his cliched answers, to have a guy be honest about the way he feels. It's fun.
Evan, what's your take on the state of the NFL right now? A lot of people thinking it's getting too diluted with the Thursday games, the, of course, every game on Sunday, then the Monday game. And depending on who you talk to, TV ratings may or may not be down. The league says they're not worried about it. Your take?
Look, I mean, the ratings are down. That's something that can't be argued. I think that the election thing is a real reason why. I mean, this is an election that's made for TV, and we love reality television, and I haven't, as a guy who doesn't follow politics, I haven't seen anything to say that this is what you normally get with an election. So I would say that that's a massive reason why interest has been, I guess, frayed from the NFL. But the ratings are still huge, so it's all relative. If they're not breaking records like they have in recent years, that's one thing, but they're still winning most nights. Now, I've just gotten, maybe it's just because I listen to too much sports talk radio or sports television shows, I'm a little tired of the what's wrong with the NFL question, because I think that things can be cyclical and some weeks are going to be great, some weeks are going to be bad. There is the argument for overexposure, and I could see that, where you have a Thursday game and a Sundays and Sunday night, Monday night, but people are still lining up in millions to watch it. So for me, it's just we have such a microscope on everything these days that we find a way to, for lack of a better term, complain about something. So the reality is ratings are down. I'm sure there's factors beyond the election that go to that. But to me, it's we're finding too much. we're finding ourselves talking about it a little bit too much.
Well, Evan, for the majority of the NFL games you work with Ian Eagle. He is the play-by-play man for your CBS broadcasts, and he was our guest last week. What are some things you have learned from Mr. Eagle?
Well, Ian, I think, is one of the best, and if not the best. I mean, especially calling a football game. I mean, he made his bones in basketball as the voice of the Nets, and obviously doing college basketball as well. But the thing that I love about Ian, and really all the great broadcasters, is the person that you hear on television is the guy that you're hanging out with at dinner or in the production meeting or in the car on the way to a meeting. I mean, his personality is just that. It's funny. It's dry. It's sarcastic. He's got some performer in him, and you see that on Sundays, but he's a genuine dude, and I feel like that comes across. And he's prepared as anyone, and nothing slips by him. And that's tough, especially, I mean, I get to do college basketball with him, so we're in the NCAA tournament. You've got to do 4 games in a day, so that's preparing for 8 teams. And I struggle, and I'm mostly just doing interviews to make sure that I don't screw up the coaches' names, and Ian's able to get through 12 hours of rosters and not make one mistake. And if he does, he finds a way to kind of weave it and almost make it seem like that's what he meant to do. So I think there's some given gifts there, but he works as hard as anyone I know. So you put all those things together, and just by being around him, you can learn a lot.
Evan Washburn of CBS Sports joining us here on The Double. Now, Evan, you know, working with you on a few occasions, you are as humble as Ian Eagle, and I have to mention that to our listeners. But, man, you have an incredible background as well, and University of Delaware, and you played lacrosse for Delaware. And not only did you play, man, you're one of the studs, a team captain. And so how do you relate that from actually playing lacrosse and then coming over to do journalism or sideline commentating for the basketball and the NFL?
Well, that's a great question. And I really do. I credit a lot of that experience to how I've been able to do what I've done and feel comfortable in some of these environments. Because, look, I've never played. I play lacrosse at a high level, but it'll never rival some of the work that these professional athletes do, whether it be high level college basketball or the NFL. But an athlete's an athlete, and I feel like I know how to approach them, deal with them, and that comes from playing sports my entire life, and then obviously playing at the college level, and knowing some of the things that I can catch somebody if they're giving me something that's not authentic. And I think, again, that comes from experience as an athlete, as a player, and as a guy that was around some people that were, you know, much better than I was. So I think that was where it's really found itself in what I do now, in the experience I had as a college athlete. And obviously, I still get to do some lacrosse commentating, and that part's a blast as well, because it keeps me engaged in the game. And I'm able to see a lot of my friends have now gotten into coaching and they play professionally as well. So it was a valuable tool. It's actually how I got started in TV. I would have never had some of the chances I had early on with the lack of experience I had I not played college lacrosse.
Now, Evan, a lot of our listeners, they think that what you do as a sideline reporter, it comes natural. It's just one of those things. You have to have the gift and this, that, and the other. But give our listeners an idea on how often do you stick with the script? Because a lot of the times you're writing down, you have a couple of paragraphs and you believe you're going to say it a certain way, but how often do you stick to the script and contrast to just off the cuff?
The truth is, Sean, the only script I would ever have is for a pregame report for a pregame show, or maybe the report that I give right before kickoff, because I'll have a good idea of what we're going to do there. Anything else that happens in game is completely based off of what's happened and what the story is, and then what context I can provide based off of the prep I've done throughout the week. So that's where preparation does become so important, because it allows you to be comfortable to discuss any topic that comes up based off an injury or based off of any event that happens during a game, and that allows you to be comfortable with not being scripted, because you can't script during a game because the game's going to take you where it wants to go. So, and now early on that was difficult, and I try and script out things that I knew I wanted to get in, and ended up it would never work out that way. You just really can't predict things.
Evan, what is your most memorable professional moment to date?
It's pretty easy. Getting a chance to work the Super Bowl last year, Super Bowl 50 in Santa Clara. I got added to the crew for the AFC Championship game and then also the Super Bowl. So I was with Jim Nantz, Phil Simms, and Tracy Wolfson. So getting to be a part of that event, and I think that moment right before kickoff where I interviewed Ron Rivera with the Panthers, and then got to watch Lady Gaga do the national anthem and kind of look around and see that. That was pretty spectacular.
Well, you and my guy Sean Boyd were also, you were both there together working that game, so great things down there at Super Bowl 50. Now, what do you remember about things you did as an intern back with Comcast to what you're doing now with CBS Sports? Are there differences or also similarities?
Oh, I mean, that was an incredibly valuable experience, because I got to see every aspect of the TV business, from how to use a camera, how to edit, how to write for television, and I was around some really helpful and talented people. So I utilize a lot of that still to this day. Now my job is much different. I was, as you mentioned, an intern, so I was doing a lot of the grunt work, and I didn't get to go to these events and do these cool things, but I still tap into a lot of the things I learned from Comcast to this day. So again, I always recommend to anybody who's getting into this business that it's much like what I've heard the restaurant business is like. If you want to own a restaurant and be successful at it, you need to have washed dishes, bus tables, waited tables, bartended, so that you know every aspect, because it makes you better, but it also makes you more aware, and it's a way to be able to work better with a ton of different personalities, because you're going to find that as well.
Evan Washburn at CBS Sports joining us here on The Double. Now, Evan, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Of course, in the NFL, there are some things going on here in Northern California. The Oakland Raiders, for instance, there is talk that they will be moving to Las Vegas. Mark Davis has jumped on board with the Las Vegas Commission. What are your thoughts, or what have you heard as far as that actually becoming a reality?
Well, it seems like one of those things, much like Los Angeles now with the Rams, where it's been in discussions now for, I'd say in serious discussions probably for the last year and a half, 2 years. And I think that if it keeps being part of the conversation, then eventually it'll happen. Now, I don't know the nuts and bolts or too many details about what it would take to actually get a new stadium in Oakland, because I do believe that would probably be the initial goal, but it appears that that is a real challenge. So the Vegas thing, again, much like the Rams always being thrown as the name that was going to go to L.A. whenever the NFL went to L.A., much like it, basically where there's smoke, there's fire. So to me, that feels real, and it would be pretty wild. And look, the Raiders, so if there's a team that's going to be in Vegas, it would seem to make sense. But having been to Oakland to do a couple games, I know that fan base there, while wild and crazy, I would feel bad if that team left Oakland, but I understand the business of this as well.
No doubt about it. And of course, you know, the fan base here is definitely true to their football team, and it would be sad to see the team go, but you know, you just understand that business is business. Now, me personally, I hope that they stay here. I lose a little bit of work, you know what I mean? So,
gotcha. You know, that's real. So, a lot of people lose a lot of work. That's what people forget about these pro teams that we see on Sunday, and you see on the Red Zone, and you see on CBS. It's the amount of people that work for these teams and are associated to them and live and die based off of, honestly, wins and losses at times is disgusting.
Yeah, so like Sands of the Hourglass, so are the Oakland Raiders. Now, Evan, of course, last night there was an awesome Sunday night football game. between the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. 6-6 tie. So, I mean, I know that we hardly get a chance to talk about this, but, you know, I know that one overtime is enough, but do you think that we, the fans, are satisfied, or should they go, you know, keep playing until they get a winner in the outcome?
I mean, whenever you're in the moment and you're fresh off of that event, and the last one I can think of was a couple of years ago, I think it was the Carolina Panthers and the Bengals, it rarely happens. So part of me thinks, well, I guess you just live with it because it is a rarity. But in the moment, and when you wake up Monday morning and you think, man, that was a tie, that's really odd. You would love to see them just keep playing or find a way to determine that game. But I also, you know, I respect the fact that this is a brutal, brutal game. And spending every Sunday on the sideline and seeing some of the collisions and impact, that maybe there's a part of that seems unfair to just have these two teams play it out like that, and you can't have a game going on forever. Now, part of me thinks, well, eventually it wouldn't take that long for somebody to be put in a situation to score. I mean, the fact that those two field goals were missed is hard to believe. So I guess a long answer to a relatively short question would be, yes, I'd love to find a way to avoid ties, but I do respect the fact that you can't have guys continuing to play and put their bodies on the line like that with no end really in sight.
Evan, we had the chance to work together week 1 when CBS had Dolphins at Seahawks. Week 11, CBS comes back. The Eagles coming into Seattle. Do you have that assignment yet for week 11 or any assignment for week 11? Do you know where you will be the weekend of?
Unfortunately, yeah. I guess I should say fortunately, because they do a good job of trying to give us some of the better matchups based off of where your crew's ranked. So I only know my assignment till next week. I'm in Buffalo for Patriots at Bills for that rematch, so that should be fun. But I have no idea where I'll be week 9, 10, and 11. So it's kind of week to week almost.
Well, at least you're getting to Buffalo before it gets too cold. Evan Washburn, we appreciate your time, your insight. You can follow Evan on Twitter at Evan Washburn. Appreciate you, Evan.
Of course.
Thanks,
guys.
Evan.
Have a good one. Thank you.
There goes Evan Washburn of CBS Sports, doing great things for playing college lacrosse. Now calling games for CBS as an analyst and sideline reporter, NFL, NCAA, and we can't forget lacrosse as well.
Man, you talk about somebody who's busy. Evan Washburn is that person, and I'd love to have him back on the show so we could talk a little bit more about his lacrosse days. Those are, you know, that you talk about a grueling sport, football being one, but man, lacrosse, there's a lot of contact, there's a lot of rigors as well. So, you know, love to have him back on and talk about that as well.
Yeah, and there were things that we didn't get to that we can get to in the future with Evan, and he's had just an incredible few years. And heck, like he said, from the Super Bowl forward, things have been in fast motion for him. And, you know, in the future, we should be able to get to some very interesting personal things in his life.
Well, yeah, and of course, as we had mentioned, he was, you know, he works with Ian Eagle, a guest here on The Double. And so you talk about two awesome individuals, great character, and I just see nothing but a tremendous upside for Evan moving forward.
Man, Sean, we've had a lot of fun today having another CBS Sports guy on, and man, who can forget E-Rock, the Tough Mudder hype man, doing great things all over the country. He lives in Paradise, lives in Hawaii, but travels the nation for Tough Mudder, and back in NYC right now doing good things in New York for Tough Mudder. And man, just to have that energy and that passion.
Yeah, and of course, you getting a chance to work with E-Rock was a lot of fun for you. And, that's a great venture, doing the Tough Mudders. And, you know, I know, Sean, you try to, get me involved in that. And I'm like, no, I don't know. There's a lot of mud, a lot of water. But, who knows? Somewhere down the line, that might be something that I'd take on with you.
Well, between the two of us, we've got, maybe one or two big Big number birthdays coming up. So, you know, I think one of those is going to be running a tough motor with E-Rock pushing us along.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And you talk about somebody with energy, the video you put together with him on Facebook. He's got his temperament is perfect for that type of event. So, you know, I'm sure anything that involves him, you guys will push me to the limit and we'll get through the course one way or another.
And we can't forget, of course, we've mentioned it, the World Series is set. Somebody is going to win it that has not won it in a very, very long time.
Man, so can you imagine the Cleveland Cavaliers, world champions of the NBA, and now here the Cleveland Indians have a chance to win the World Series? It's amazing. Cleveland had been inept for far too long, and then now they're getting an embarrassment of riches if the Cleveland Indians win it. Of course, the Chicago Cubs, it's been a while since 1908, Sean Wally, since they've won the world title. 1947 since they've been to the World Series. So it's been quite a long time for both of these teams. It should be a great World Series. It should be a lot of fanfare. And, you know, I just don't know who I'm going to root for, to be honest with you.
You know, I hope it snows. I hope that both cities, they have blizzards, because there is no reason Major League Baseball should still be being played right now unless they host it at a neutral site that is covered indoors.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time you've seen snow in World Series. I believe the New York Yankees about 15, 20 years ago had a game postponed, or maybe Detroit earlier than that in the past 7 years. But it does happen. So, you know, I mean, you have two teams that are battling off the Great Lakes here. And so, yeah, with that lake effect snow that could happen, I mean, you know that as well as I do, being, you know, travelers of the Globetrotters. Oh, man, it can get pretty cold. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll happen.
Well, Sean, of course, next Monday is All Hallows Eve and the Seattle Seahawks. Ooh, this gets very interesting. Trying to find some offense moving forward after the 6-6 tie last night. The New Orleans Saints welcome the Seahawks to town for a Sunday 10 a.m. kick on the 30th of October.
Well, yeah, if there's any team that you would like to play to get your confidence back up and put some numbers up, unfortunately, it's the New Orleans Saints. So that should be a great game for Seattle, that, you know, to get themselves, you know, get the motivation going. You know, I personally believe that last night was two dynamic defenses that went head to head. Man, it kind of showed Seattle that they're not alone as far as that defensive toughness. So there's teams out there that are willing to step up to the challenge. But yeah, I believe that New Orleans coming into Seattle should be a lot of fun for Seattle. And yeah, they'll get their touchdowns and their points back up.
Well, Seahawks fans sure hope so. And, you know, all I can picture is somebody down there in the Big Easy has got their Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll voodoo dolls ready to go.
Well, they're going to need more than that because the Saints, to be honest with you, their record has not been up to par this year. And, you know, they lost another close one to Kansas City yesterday, 27-21. They've lost to the Oakland Raiders 35-34. So the AFC West has not been good to them, with the exception of the San Diego Chargers, where they beat the San Diego Chargers at the last second. But the Saints are one of those teams that allow a lot of points. And again, this should be a good game, a good barometer for Seattle to get their points back up.
Any sports work for you this coming weekend, the Niners, the Raiders, or maybe a college game?
Man, we are off until November the 6th, where there are two games going on in the Bay. Yours truly will be working the Sunday night game, the Oakland Raiders and the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos come into Oakland Alameda County Coliseum for an AFC West big battle. And of course, there's another game that'll be going on in Santa Clara. That'll be a Fox Sports game where my son Devon Boyd will be working for Fox Sports that Sunday. So you talk about keeping it in the family, man. That's what you do.
And, you know, Sean, real quick before we get out of here on this Monday night, you know, look at the irony. Last week, we had Crystal Clark of Rock, Paper, Scissors Foundation on the show talking about something, unfortunately, that is too close to too many people. And now we have a Northwest, Pacific Northwest resident, former Seahawk, in Josh Brown, basically being told by the NFL, you cannot play. Yet he's still getting paid, which makes no sense, for abusing his former wife. It's just crazy how all this is coming to light right after we talk about it, even though these incidents with Brown happened in prior years.
It's a sad situation that this, you know, that this happens to anybody. And so, you know, I hear a lot of people, you know, talking about, well, you know, the Ray Rice situation, that was worse because, you know, I got a chance to see it firsthand on video and that makes it worse. And, you know, gosh, you know, that couldn't be any further from the truth. If you're committing domestic violence, you don't have to see it in order for it to be an act. And, you know, in Josh Brown's case, you know, he admitted to it. You know, he admitted up to the point, Sean Wally, to where he said that, you know, he treated his wife like a slave. And, you know, if you read the reports, you just think, oh my goodness, there's no way in the world that this kind of thing could happen. You know, it's a sad time. It's a sad time for, you know, sports when we have to deal with these types of subjects. And I just hope that, you know, the things that the Double S Express is doing along with Crystal Clark and Rock, Paper, Scissors can bring, you know, some type of a voice to help these situations to where they don't happen again.
Yeah, because once is too much. And, you know, it's great to see that the King County Sheriff has shots fired at the NFL because the NFL basically almost made phone calls to King County and thought because they were the NFL, they could do what they wanted and get what they wanted. And that was completely not the case. And the King County Sheriff said, look, you guys didn't go through the proper channels and the proper ways to get the reports and go through the public disclosure the right way. And just because you're the big shield with three letters doesn't mean you can get around the rules and regulations.
Yeah, you know, the NFL has to get better on this. There was a rule that was put in place after the Ray Rice incident, Greg Hardy as well, that there's a 6-game suspension. That is the minimum. So for Josh Brown to be put in a situation where he was suspended for a game and with pay, it just doesn't look good in the light of the NFL when they're supposed to have these things in place. And, you know, we'll see what happens here in the upcoming weeks. I believe Roger Goodell is going to take a look at all the information and make a decision then moving forward. But the decision that he makes is a reaction from the anguish and disgust from all of us as fans and people who support the NFL, that this type of thing wouldn't happen again and there should be some type of order put in place, and it just seems like there isn't, Sean Wally, and that's a bad turn of events for the NFL.
Well, Sean, it's been another fun show. Lots we covered in this show tonight from the NFL, Major League Baseball, college football, two great guests, E-Rock from Tough Mudder and Evan Washburn of CBS Sports. Ooh, up next, Halloween. It's going to be a spooky one.
Man, well, it's going to be a spooky one. It is, for this past week, Sean Wally, it's been a spooky one, at least for the kickers. We don't even have to go into the Josh Brown thing, but man, yeah, two kickers from last night as well that are wondering what in the world is going on. And, yeah, it's spooky to say the least for these kickers, man. These guys have to get things right moving forward. Well, man, it's been a great show, Mr. Wally, once again. And so, you know, as we always say here on the double, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope that it goes through and hits nothing but the bottom of the net. For Sean Wally in Selah, Washington, yours truly in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California, Doug Newsom in Paradise, California. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. 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 Imagine the possibilities.